So, we go on to page 246, I think. The service review program. We've finished with animals for the night pretty well. The basic question here, members, is whether we stick to 9 or 12 service reviews. We had earlier decided to make it 12. Staff have suggested 9 would be easier, I think. So it's a matter of 9 or 12 or something else. Councillor Telfer.
For the 2018-19 service review program, and I'd like to speak to that.
Yes, please go ahead.
It was actually the Finance and Audit Committee, not staff, that noted that there are so many recommendations that are not implemented yet that the putting of more resources into the reviewing, which has been wholesome all the way along. I've read hundreds of pages on reviews in the audit committee. They've been solid, the recommendations are solid, the work is solid, but the implementation is not yet done. The difference between the 9 and the 12 is in the planning and development department, and I would note that council already the Finance and Audit Committee had already looked at a possible service provider for those reviews. But what is the point in doing those next year if we cannot implement them till 2019-20 because of the volumes? So let's have some of these recommendations brought to bear so that we get savings and other benefits, morale and efficiency benefits from getting done the work that's been suggested, and then it's time to do the Development Services Department and maybe more speed, with greater speed, put those recommendations into place in 2019-20.
Councillor Telfer, perhaps you can help me out because you're a member of the Finance and Audit Committee. I've sort of been warned off it a bit, so I don't go. But it seems to me that when the Finance and Audit Committee noted that there was an increasing number of service review recommendations building up which hadn't been implemented, it had two choices. One was to say, well, just do less service reviews. Then you'll have less things to implement. The other option would be to say, why on earth haven't the resources been applied by management to get things done if these service reviews are suggesting improvements? So can you help me understand why only one of those options was considered?
I've sat in the Finance and Audit Committee with Councillor Carey, and we have seen in the back up to 20 staff that have come to report on reviews, been involved in reviews, and the actual putting in recommendations is not an instant solution. Some recommendations are complex and time-consuming and costly in themselves. So I think it's quite reasonable to have a look at this. I think we thought when we started this term of office and when we thought we would review every single area that we would get this done quickly and efficiently. We realised that this is something that staff have done over and above their normal day-to-day work, and we have had benefits out of their recommendations, but each department, when they're asked to review, they want to put their best effort into it. So each review's been wholesome. And I assume we have found a person that would be doing the development services reviews, which are planning policy, development service and building services, but that person would be working in a complete and large way, and there would be many recommendations coming out of it. So I look forward to that happening in 2019-20.
Thank you. And Mr. Scull, it's a question for you as well. I mean, have we just come to this, that we're not applying enough resources to stick to the service review program we initiated?
That I've got a restriction on the number of FTE that I can apply to the organisation, and a challenge to run a service review program which is ambitious. And the big thing is that some of these actions that we're taking out of it, one of them that's highlighted in green in your report, is metrics that matter. The organisation would be far better if we had better optics on the business, but to actually get those metrics is a very complex process. So some of the actions that we got are very minor and some of them are big, and I've been reluctant to put on more staff because of the KPI that I'm clearly being directed to apply with, to actually not put on resources. So our challenge is, and I think we've done pretty well in getting the recommendations done that we have, is to work within the budget restrictions that I have with resources, if that answers the question.
Yes, Minister. Is that seconded? Question from Councillor Kerry?
Vinnie, could we have an indication of how much every service review costs?
I know some work's been done on that. Mr. Mifsud?
Yeah, through the Chair, I have emailed that information through to members of few weeks. Sorry.
There was an email from Mr. Mifsud a few weeks ago, which
thank you.
I think it came up to near half a million over the last couple of years.
Very happy to re-forward that on to members. I don't have that at my fingertips. Very happy to re-forward it on.
But
I'm sorry, Councillor, I don't have the specifics with me, and I want to make sure I give you the right information, but I have sent that information out to all members.
I guess the real question is not so much how many reviews, but the fact that we've saved, I don't know, many, many times that, I would have thought, with the results of the reviews.
Through the Chair, we saved $1.4 million in one of the reviews that Erica Comrie did for us, and that's been augmented by ongoing past that. So I would say it's significantly more than $1.4
million. Right, so we're looking at seconding, Councillor Byram seconding the motion. Please speak if you wish.
Thank you, Worship. As Councillor Telfer has said, that some of these have been very, very thorough. It is time-consuming, and I do agree with that we should go down to the 9 services. Yes, we have spent money on doing the services reviews, but it's showed dividends, and we have made savings, as was just stated, and there's a lot more savings across the board. I believe 9 is the correct number for moving forward, and that's what I'm supporting. Thank you.
Anyone speaking against? Question, Councillor Garth.
It's just in regard to the fact that the review that would be dropped if we were to go to 9 would be the planning area. Would it be fair, put this through the Chair to the CEO, would it be fair to say that the change of management would have, by default, forced a fair bit of review of procedure, or would it not?
Mr. Scull?
Through the Chair, significant changes are being made with the new manager in that area, and that includes the CSI area too, so combine that with the planning department, and I think there's efficiencies coming out as a matter of course because of the lens that he's putting over his department.
Any other speakers? Then Councillor Pryor.
Yeah, I'm against this. I really do not want to see us delay a development services and a planning policy review. I think it's one of the areas of that our community has a bit of a disconnect to what we actually think actually happens in that area. So I would really like to see that go ahead and nail down some of those some of the areas that maybe that disconnect occurs in. I get calls about this sort of stuff all the time, development services in particular. And I think a review would be well worth doing. And I understand that we're constrained on resource, but I'd still like to see that go ahead.
Ms. McKenzie would like to make a comment.
Through the chair, just to advise members that as part of our internal audit plan, which is usually run by KPMG, with this specific case, there's a review being undertaken by Helen Dyer. She's doing a full compliance review on the statutory compliance of the planning section, which will be a public report subject to the Finance and Audit Committee. It's due to come through in August. So there is a review going on within development, but it's just being done through the internal audit plan.
Although, just from hearing that then, statutory compliance is a lot different to what would come out of a service review looking for efficiency and so on. Is that a fair comment, Ms. McKenzie?
It is fair, but it is certainly looking at how the developers are applying how the planners are applying the legislation to the various planning applications across the unit. It is also looking at how the planning applications are being divided amongst the planners, who's doing what, the flow and how it's happening. So there is a service element to it, but it is focusing on a compliance.
Okay. Any other speakers in favour of the motion? Councillor Crossland.
Thank you, Your Worship. Look, I'm in favour of this for a couple of reasons. One, I do believe that we need to get some really good value out of the reviews rather than maybe place staff under undue pressure as well as their current role. The other reason is we're in the process of increasing and improving our ICT. One of the things that has held us back in some of our reviews is the fact that we can't get the information we need to actually do a satisfactory review of some areas. Once that ICT is in place, things like the business, the planning section and things like that should be easy to get that information from those areas. But I will foreshadow that with the fact that if we can't actually complete the reviews that we need because of lack of FTEs, then this motion should have had that as an option in here, that we can do the 9 and with current resources we're willing to do 12, but it will cost X amount for additional staff. And we've had occasions before where we've approved the extra staff on a temporary basis if we want to get those reviews complete. So I would just mention that to administration, that would have been a better option for us to talk about and deliberate tonight.
That would be a rational approach. Any further speakers? Councillor Hull.
I want to quickly back up Councillor Pryor. He makes a very good point about the ongoing letters and emails we get about perceived issues with the planning department. There's two aspects of looking at planning. One is the obligations placed on us through the 30-year plan, and sometimes there's a code, a state government code, that we've really got no control over. I accept that. And we actually do have a DPA before the minister at the moment that seems to be going through the argy-bargy. The signal I'm getting is that the developers rule. And unfortunately, the council, in the eyes of the community, are not blameless when it comes to, and maybe I'll get some support from the mayor with this, not at significant variance, that old chestnut that's rolled out. And
getting a bit beyond the core of the motion before us. But
if there was a service review, that would be one of the focuses I'd like to see as to whether the administration is really representing our community and the wishes of this council in terms of how far you can stretch not at significant variance, because we're constantly hearing about, well, it doesn't meet this site coverage, it doesn't meet this setback, and all of these things. And they're all valid points, and they're all true in a technical sense. But, you know, there's some sort of unwritten formula somewhere where, oh, yeah, well, we can tick that off. And arbitrarily, Category one, these things happen. Yeah.
This really is the statutory compliance point that Ms. McKenzie was talking about, so that will be looked at, I'm told.
Well,
is that taking place, Ms. McKenzie?
Through the Chair, it's currently underway. The report's due to come to the Finance and Audit Committee in August.
Well, why haven't we been consulted?
The scope went through the Finance and Audit Committee at the last meeting.
No. Why haven't we, the elected members, been consulted on this? Because clearly we've got some good feedback for that as to what the issues might be. If you don't know what to look at and what the issues are, you'll never get a good report.
Rather, now that we're aware of it, could I suggest that members who would like to comment on that, we would have the scope available, I believe, through the Finance and Audit Minutes. Perhaps that could be sent up by Ms. McKenzie, and then if members wish, they can supply comments, whether it's directly to the inspector person or to Mr. Katnar or whoever you think, or Mr. Skull, whatever. Thank you. All right. I think we've probably had enough discussion. Ms. Councillor Telfer, to close the debate.
I think there are some important points. I didn't come lightly at the 9 services versus the 12 services, but I do think there's a whole balance about how staff work, and in the end you have your performance and innovation leader and the person that's organising the reviews, and you can work under pressure for a certain amount of time. You have to at points take the foot off the brakes a little bit, or off the accelerator, sorry, rather than the brakes. That's a bad pun. But I also need to point out that we are a council of continuous improvement. So, yes, if there are, and there are issues to do with responding to development service requests and development department complaints, but we can act on those. There's no need to wait for a formal review as such to bring forward those things. I think this is the way to go at this point in time, not because development services won't be reviewed, it will be in 2019-20.
All those in favour, raise your hand. All those against, carried by majority. Thank you. On to page 256, 57, something like that. I've got two numbers on my agenda. Seacliff Park development site. Now, I give credit to Councillor Gard for agitating on this issue. And once elected members and staff have had a good look at that development site, it's evident that most of the rate-bearing properties would be in City of Marion in any case. And if we're going to avoid the issue of a council boundary that runs through the middle of someone's lounge room, it's better to do that now than just let the problem come to the boil. So credit to Councillor Gard for that. It's a very straightforward motion. Who'd like to move it? Councillor Gard? Did you wish to speak? Briefly?
Very briefly, it is a commonsensical move. I think we've felt pain even before the development in various ways. We won't go into that. But it is something that I'm sure we can find an answer to. There seems to be an inclination on the part of the City of Holfast Bay in spots, and it might be how we approach them, but I'm sure there is a path, and I'm sure it's a worthy path.
Seconded, Councillor Crossland. Do you wish to speak?
Just to echo what Councillor Gard has said, look, it does make common sense. The area is mainly the City of Marion. We've already come across some administration difficulties with that site because of the two boundary issue. So I would like to seek City of Holfast Bay support to realign that land back into fully the City of Marion.
Anyone speaking against the motion? Question, Councillor Hull.
This question will be of particular interest to the members that were on the former council. How much damage was done by the previous CEO and mayor in terms of this when they clearly were sending signals to Holfast Bay that we were going to hand over our land to them? I'm just concerned that, and that did happen, and I raised great objection to that, foolhardy stuff in my opinion. I'd like to know whether in the discussions maybe the CEO's had with the CEO down there, whether my concerns are valid anymore, or whether it is a factor in that might sort of play in the thinking of the City of Holfast Bay.
Thank you, Chair. I actually talked to the CEO of Holfast Bay today, about boundary realignment and opportunities. He never mentioned that, so I don't know if it's on his agenda that there might be that option. There is some resistance from his council, and I think we would find that when we write the letter, and that often happens, that there will be some trade-off required from some people if you're talking about boundary realignment, but he never mentioned any discussion about us transferring the Seacliff site, the Lorenzen site, to him, so I don't know.
Well, that would be unfortunate, given that I've always taken a very generous approach towards City of Holdfast Bay. I've said that they can have as much of the City of Marin as they want right up the South Road. Anyway, if there are no speakers against, I'll put the motion. All those in favour? Carried unanimously. Thank you. And on to page 260, unsolicited proposals policy. Has kicked around for a little bit. It's probably got to an acceptable point, I think. We certainly need one. Councillor Telfer?
I'll move as per number one, and number two endorses the City of Marion unsolicited proposals policy, appendix one, without the extra. Yes.
You wish to speak to that?
And in speaking to it, I've been particularly interested in the whole issue of confidentiality. The confidentiality of elected members when we find out about unsolicited proposals, at what point we are no longer bound by that confidentiality. So there are clauses there. I've also raised the issue of the confidentiality to the Finance and Audit Committee, because if large unsolicited proposals come along and they're asked for viewpoints on them a bit later, they have to have an overview to be able to put those in perspective, and also have the perspective about the potential resources that these unsolicited proposals not only may use but also may bring into the city. So I had read that proposal policy in the light mainly of those confidentiality issues.
Is that seconded? Councillor Hull?
Happy to second it, Mr. Mayor, but I'm more than looking more than forward to us actually walking the talk, because you've actually needed this policy, and I guess the events in recent months is a great example of that, where we find out about an unsolicited proposal in one of these informal gatherings.
Problem with that.
You interjecting?
Yes, I'm interjecting.
Yeah, I thought so. And then we're sworn to secrecy. Right, and it's all part of the whole other gaggle of secret items as well. And then over 2 months later, suddenly, oh, we better put it out to an EOI. Well, you know, I just think that particular bidder has got that advantage. It really should be more expedient, and we shouldn't be actually sitting on these confidential items when there's no formal confidential ruling. Because, as I've said, we're running two books. It's like the old accountant that would have one book and then there's another book, two set of books. We can't be doing that. and it has to be transparent, and we need to actually walk the talk and actually live up to the rhetoric that's in this report, because otherwise somebody talked about not being caught up in what was the state government project up north that went sour? Gilman. We don't want to be caught up in a Gilman type situation. Well, and I think that's probably good governance, a good governance outlook. But to learn from mistakes that have been made by others, and maybe our own mistakes. But I actually think that with unsolicited approaches, and we've had a number of those in the past, like one of the earliest ones were the ice skating arena. Okay, now that sat with us for how long before suddenly now it's out there for an EOI? We sat on that for years. So, you know,
I don't think that's correct at all. That's, I'm sorry, you cannot mislead the public like that in your
contribution. Well, how long has it been?
Well, nothing like that, that's
well,
for sure.
Well, why no? How many months then?
Councillor Hull, look, I can understand the point you make, but help us out. Because one of two things happens. If a corporation comes to us with a commercial proposal, it involves their commercial in-confidence information, necessarily, about their ambitions or their costs or whatever. There are kind of two ways that management can deal with it. They can either tell us almost straight away, and then by the time that we get a council report prepared and EOI drafted, it might be a month or two before it goes out. The alternative is to keep it from us those couple of months, prepare what they think we might want to do, and then spring it on us after a whole series of discussions. Now, it seems to me that you're objecting to either of those possibilities. But help us out as to what would be the preferable course.
Know, your pattern of cross-examining elected members is continuing tonight, Mr. Mayor, which is a skillful way of interjecting. But I would actually point out that the EOI that was released today in regards to that hotel is not complex. There's no detail in there at all. I could have scribbled that up, and it would have taken me 15 minutes. So, you know, if this EIO, or whatever you want to call it, expression of interest, is going to go out for public consultation, it's complex and it needs to be well thought out, fair enough. But have a look at that. It's an A4 blurb like that, you know? And with no detail as to how many rooms or how much height or side area or nothing. There's no technical detail in there at all. And as soon as we get these expressions of interest, we should have a more expedient approach to actually dealing with this, because it does give those first bidders an undue advantage. There's no doubt about it, because we've been sitting on it and considering it behind closed doors for months sometimes, and sometimes even longer.
In that the person who came up with the idea has an unfair advantage in the month or two that we take to prepare the EOI, when potentially they've been thinking about it and planning it for years before they even come to us. Is that right?
Mr. Mayor, yes, they have got an advantage, and that was the whole game, I'm sure, to actually have that advantage. Let's actually go to Marion, because nobody else has actually done this. But we need to actually then work very, very quickly to make sure there is a level playing ground. And that's all I'm saying. And unfortunately, the EOI that went out today does not have the content in there that I would have hoped for in terms of the options available to those bidders. It seems to be set for a certain outcome.
Okay.
I've got a question before some comments. So if a commercial entity came to council and they said, we're interested in XYZ here, and then we put out an expression of interest which had XYZ, what would happen to council?
Well, somewhat hypothetical, but in other words, the whole point, I think what is behind that question, is that the whole point of the EOI process, which is actually inherent in this new policy, is that a level playing ground is created. If we had heard from the Golden Gate Motel chain that they were experts in building a certain kind of hotel with a pool and an art gallery, and then we put those specifics in the EOI, we would be inviting criticism that we were setting it up for them. But if we don't have the detail and say, look, hotel, that's the site, what do you want to do? Then we get criticised because there's no detail, but it does mean it's a level playing field for any potentially interested commercial operators.
Comment on this is that I don't feel there has been anything untoward, and I'm getting rather sick of us being denigrated, council being compared to people that run two sets of books, which is a very serious allegation, and also people not being able to understand the process, either not being able to understand it or willingly choosing not to understand what's going on. It's almost like there's a blind spot and it's all a conspiracy and everyone's bad. And look, I wonder if, Your Worship, I wonder if when council purchased that land in those years, was there the quest for transparency by elected members at that time? That's the question that should be asked. Because there are people that remember what happened then and what people were saying. And sometimes the tunes change.
Right. I think that was in favour of the policy. Anyone else against? Then the mover may wish to... Councillor Telfer, did you wish to? Then I'll put it to the vote. All those in favour? Carried unanimously. Excellent. Then... in terms of the next matters, I'm going to suggest that because they're fairly routine, the annual review of the schedule of delegations, page 266, but also the corporate reports for noting, work health and safety, monthly finance, questions taken on notice register. I'm inviting someone to move them en bloc, if you wish. Councillor Westwood, did you wish to speak to any of them?
No, thank you. Thanks to staff for their hard work.
A fine sentiment. Seconded Councillor Byram, but seconded but not speaking. Got a question, Councillor Hull?
Well, Mr. Mayor, this document here about the Remuneration Tribunal submission...
That's not included in this.
It's not included?
No.
I thought it was en bloc.
No, but not consecutive.
It's not consecutive.
The annual review, it's just picking out four relatively routine reports: the schedule of delegations, the work health safety monthly report, the monthly finance report, questions taken on notice register. Right, so we'll come back to the Remuneration Tribunal submission. Just trying to clear the decks a bit, Councillor.
Fair enough.
Any opposition or questions? Councillor Pryor.
Just a question about on page 507 about the curb and water table graph. I mean, whether Mr. Lyons is here. Whether we're going to get through that. You can have a look on the way through. Seems a long way.
Calling up Mr. Lyons. While Mr. Lyons is coming up, a week ago we asked for a table on carryovers, those which are so-called true capital carryovers, as well as grants carryovers. So, Mr. Skull, why don't we have that?
Thank you, Chair. I promised to get it to councillors by close of business Thursday, the reason being that the finance team have been getting out the finance results, and I didn't want that to be interfered with, and so and couldn't happen. So... I just couldn't do it until tomorrow, Thursday night, when you get it by close of business.
Oh, that's fair enough. Thank you. Mr. Lyons, about the water project.
Yeah, curb and water table. Just
curb and water.
38% complete with a couple of days to go.
Through the Chair, Councillor Pryor, that's a little bit frustrating, that one. A short story of a long 12-month program. We did let a contract early this financial year, so back in August, to do two things: to come up with a list of curb and water table replacements, and then secondly to prioritise it. Our contractor took a long time and did the first adequately and the second inadequately, and we had to in the end unfortunately terminate that contract and get a second contract to do the prioritisation. That's put us behind the ball, we freely admit that. However, I can say that I've got a number of areas where I will have carryovers, and that's not one of them. So there's invoicing behind there. Of course, it's a month behind. It's a small project, and we will finish it this financial year.
Any other questions on any of those? Councillor Crossland.
Thank you, Worship. The other question that I would like clarified in that report is a distinction between carryovers caused by potential contract issues, contractors, and that compared to carryovers as a result of work not completed by staff.
Mr. Scull.
Through you, Chair, we will provide that. So we'll take out of that any grant funding and also work in progress, because not all contracts that we run, not all projects that we run are going to run within the bounds of a financial year. So we'll show you the work in progress and percentage of work that's complete on them, and we'll take that out as well.
So, Mr. Scull, a year ago we had a really, about that time, we had a really helpful table to do with carryovers, and that distinguished your basically delayed capital works versus grant carryovers, which arrived on our doorstep just before the end of the financial year, things like that. But Councillor Crossland is asking for a further distinction to be made in terms of the delayed capital works between those works which are being done in-house and those works which are being outsourced.
Correct, and we'll provide that. We'll identify those works that we're outsourcing.
Well, that's another one for the question on notice register. Thank you. Any other questions? Very well. I'll put the motions on block, those four motions. All those in favour? Carried. All those against? No, carried unanimously. Thank you. So now we'll go back to the Remuneration Tribunal submission, page 469. Now, in this respect, what I've provided to you at your desk is an alternative submission, only alternative in the sense of the motion being the same but different supporting material. Basically, the version you have in your agenda is more or less a copy of what was done 4 years ago with updated statistics. The problem being that there are comments in there which actually don't match up with the motion which is suggested. Now, bear in mind, what we want to put to the tribunal, if anything, is entirely up to you. It doesn't have to be the suggestion that's recorded there. I mean, I'm in favour of there being no rises for councillors or mayors, but the view of the council may be something different, and it's entirely up to you. But I would commend to you the certainly if you're going down the track of the motion as printed, then the appendix is commended to you with the tracked changes, because it's more consistent with the motion. I hope you're following me. The reason for such an extensive supporting document, I might add, is that the Remuneration Tribunal has a set format for these submissions. You have to talk about your size, your population, your something else. So that's why it does seem longer than what you might think is necessary. So up to someone to move accordingly. Councillor Byram.
Thank you, Your Worship. Yes, I will move the motion as listed, but with the new appendix or whatever you want to call it. I've just been brought to my attention we need to include the 2018 budget reference.
On page 9, we talk about 2017-18. We have passed the budget at 1.8%, so we probably should update that as well. We couldn't do that before now.
So if the mover could incorporate
yes,
that change
to
update
to incorporate
the
that change,
information about the 18-19 budget. Anything further to add, Councillor? Then is that seconded? Councillor Valescu, anything to add?
I think that we have to be really careful about what is perceived that we get out of
this role. So I think it's prudent not to ask for the raises, and I also think that we need to look logistically at the benefits or reimbursements that people get for their local government activity. And I know there's been some controversy about the other allowances, other duties, especially in regards to those serving in the LGA, but what hasn't been mentioned is that a lot of those people do receive their council allowances or mayoral allowances as well as other payments, so they're not there as professional people. We're not here as professional people. We're here as representatives for the community with a stipend to assist during that process.
Thank you. Anyone speaking against or question from... question? A couple of questions, I'll take them. Councillor Gard first.
Yes, this is one that perhaps through the Chair, Councillor Pfeiffer might want to comment on. I've always been rather intrigued that the Deputy Mayor allowance is 25% on top of the normal allowance for a councillor, but the ask of a deputy mayor is quite diverse, and I know Councillor Pfeiffer's been on the receiving end of that in the past, not in this term, but in older terms where, well, I think I'm right, that's what I was
told.
Well,
a number of people in the Chamber have acted as deputy mayors.
Probably so. Is there any comment from people that have served as deputy mayor as to their viewpoint on that allowance?
Look, I'll leave it to members to answer that question if they choose to when they're making a contribution to the debate. Now, are there other questions, Councillor Telfer?
My question is that I'm scrambling to find the reference, but is there reference here as this being the only allowance that elected members receive? And if so, what do we do about the travel and meal allowances we receive?
That's a good question, Ms. McKenzie. Does the tribunal look at all of those things, or is the question just the annual allowances? Yeah.
Through the Chair, it is just the allowances. The other expenditure that you're referring to in regards to travel and meal allowances are set under policy, which is required under the Local Government Act. So the Remuneration Tribunal purely just looks at the allowances that are set by them and paid on a quarterly basis by Council.
Councillor Hull.
Just to be clear, And it's not in the motion, but we're actually indicating to the tribunal we don't want a rise at all. Was that what we're voting on?
Yeah, that's what's intended.
It's not.
That's a fair comment.
There's a talks about CPI in the report, but we're not talking about CPI.
Is this motion from the one that was done 4 years ago? Ms. McKenzie can help with that.
So, I just want to be clear, that's what we're voting on.
Or the motion that we're passing.
So, through the Chair, the original submission that was placed in the agenda had recommended a no increase or a CPI increase. The one that has been passed around that members have included within the minutes is no increase. So it excludes the CPI.
It talks about CPI, but...
I mean, I can tell you, members, I've gone through and cut out great slabs from what was done 4 years ago, but I'm certainly happy to accept helpful contributions in that regard.
Here's page 8.
Page 8.
I remember seeing it.
Yeah, the above allowance should be done twice in the annual basis. About $5 in the
bottom. Right. This is why I asked the question, because that's what I read in the report.
I didn't bother to take that out because those allowances have been increased, haven't they, by CPI traditionally for all councils. That's not the real risk of a cost blowout. The risk is that most councils get together and argue for a 20% increase, not a 2% per annum increase.
No.
But it's in the hands of the council.
Well, that should be redacted, because that's actually contrary to what I've been told. The above allowances should be adjusted by CPI on an annual basis.
It's not, Councillor, it's not contradictory. That is something you might want to move, but it's not contradictory, because the question about the annual allowances is whether they should go from, 19 to 30.
I'm not interested in that. I'm only interested...
Well, that's actually the motion, right? That's a separate issue from CPI. If you want to cut out CPI as well, then that can be done.
Well, from what I'm hearing tonight, that is the intent.
No, not really. Well, it's setting the base rate is the intent. Councillor Hull's not listening now. So, Councillor Byron? Yep.
If I could clear that up, please, Your Worship. So, my intent was to say no increase to the allowance, but I was not cutting out CPI increases.
Yeah, so it's as printed.
Yeah.
And just to clarify the business about Appendix 2 and Appendix 1, can Ms McKenzie just clarify which document's which?
Through the Chair, The Appendix 2, written in that top sentence of the minutes, refers to the one that was put in your agenda. The one, Appendix 1, that is attached to the minutes is the one that was handed out. The marked up version. Yeah.
Right. So the Appendix 2, Appendix 1, is really saying what's in the written agenda subject to the changes which are in the copy that was put on the desk, just to put it in plain language.
Yeah, that's correct, and it'll be attached to the minutes, so it's transparent in regards to what's been adopted tonight.
Right, so it's been moved and seconded. We've had some questions. Questions, Councillor Appleby?
Actually says Appendix 2 on the front, so...
I found that confusing.
So it's not really clear what we're actually voting on.
Should the 1 and 2 in the motion be swapped around? It's not an amendment. But isn't the 1 and 2 to be swapped around? Because isn't it the report which was in there is Appendix 1, and the one that was handed around with changes is Appendix 2.
No, it was Appendix 2 in the report.
Oh, well, so we've got two Appendix 2s. Is that the problem?
Yeah, so I think what Jane is trying to reflect is that this will be Appendix 1 to the minutes.
Okay, so can everyone just write Appendix 1 on top of what you've got on your desk? Right? Will that solve it? Well, that's certainly, I like that, that's neater, that's a lot neater. That's incorporating the track changes, that's the intention, isn't it?
Yeah, it is.
So, for clarification, is the mover and seconder happy to adopt the wording that Ms. Thwaites has come up with, that the City of Marion submission to the Remuneration Tribunal provided at Appendix 1 to the minutes be forwarded to the Tribunal. Yeah. Are you happy to accept that on the basis that Appendix 1 is what's been handed out tonight? Okay. Mover and seconder accept that with leave of the meeting. However, there are still questions and maybe opposition. Councillor Valesky, you seconded, didn't you? But in light of that discussion, I will allow the question.
What's the option to actually ask for the no rise and freezing the allowances for the term? Because personally,
I'm in favour
of that.
allowances?
Freezing them. Say, well, keep them at they are for the next 4 years.
That would be the no CPI option, and either you or Councillor Hull may wish to move that as an amendment.
Can I seconded the motion. Can I move that as an amendment?
Well, you can't, but I think Councillor Hull wants to.
Yep.
Yeah. Right. So there's an option.
So I'll move that now.
I'm well, happy to incorporate
yeah, I'll
it.
You the, give you the no. call, Councillor Hull.
I'm happy
so,
to incorporate
Mr.
it.
Mr. Mayor, I'm happy to move that as an amendment. I think that our allowance is quite sufficient as it is. This actually is going to last for the next
so,
4 years.
And, yeah, just to clarify, the motion is that the sentence which provides for annual CPI increases be deleted.
Yes. Yeah. And it may well be that the figures in here need to demonstrate the current allowance rather than the one in here. If it's not the current allowance.
Yes. Ms. McKenzie says it's the current allowance.
All right. So all we've got to do is just delete the reference to CPI.
Yeah. Please speak further if you wish.
Yeah. Well, look, I think my allowance is quite adequate. When I first came on this council back in 1993, my allowance was $2,300 a year. That was it. Now, I don't claim for mileage in this term, maybe in the last term either, I can't remember. I do claim occasionally, very rarely, for childcare because I don't have immediate family in Adelaide. My wife has obligations and then we get our kids looked after, but it's a rare occasion. And I'm happy with that. Like, if I go to a conference or something, and I've been to one in this term, I would claim travel from the airport or whatever it might be, and I think that's fine. I just think that we need to demonstrate to our community that we actually are showing our own restraint. We need to actually identify to our workforce that we're applying the same restraint that we actually are trying to apply to them.
Just a point of clarification, we're not actually suggesting to the workforce that they have no annual CPI increases.
No, we're not. Far from it. But we are actually indicating that we are actually showing some level of restraint. And I think that I put in a fair amount of work, probably more than some, maybe not as much as others. And all things considered, I get a good allowance. I look forward to getting that allowance every so often. It's fair. It's fair and reasonable. We have other little concessions as well. We get fed. That's important because if you're rushing from work, you need to actually have access to a meal. Otherwise, you're making decisions on an empty tummy, and that can't be good. And they are modest meals. There's no prawns or anything out there that I can remember anyway. Or champagne or lobsters, and I just think that this is actually a measure of us. It will last for the next 4 years. So this is actually reflecting going forward for 4 years, it's actually something that new participants should take on board. That this is not a gold mine for them to come into.
Councillor Pfeiffer.
Thank you, Your Worship. Look, I enthusiastically support this. I think...
You're seconding the amendment?
I do, yes, absolutely.
Yeah.
Yep. Look, I think we do have some very prudent members around this chamber, some extremely prudent members, and I take my hat off to them. You know, some members don't even have the meal because they don't feel that it's appropriate, and I take my hat off to that. Look, this is specifically about the elected member allowance this evening. And look, in an era where it feels like every week you're seeing a news article about politicians putting up their own pay, look, this is us taking a stand and saying, look, we don't think that's appropriate, quite honestly. You know, we saw it from the LGA the other week as well. And, you know, I don't think that's appropriate. And I think this is us putting our line in the sand and saying, look, we think we're actually paid quite appropriately. Let's continue on with that. I think it's the right thing to be going for no rise. I think, and as Councillor Hull mentioned, like, this is a message to those who are considering standing for local government. You know, you're not, honestly, you're not here for the money. Any member of this current council who's here for the money, crikey, honestly, you're better off working at Macca's. You really are. Like, for the hours, you are. I mean, the hours you, for those who genuinely do put in the hours that you put in, compared to the allowance, it's less than minimum wage. But you know what? That's not why we're here. We're actually here for the benefit of the community. We put our hands up knowing what the pay was, and we said, no, we actually want to do this because we've got some great ideas. We've got some things that we think that we can do for our communities. We know how to make our communities a little bit better, and that's why we've stood up and put our hands up for these positions 3.5 years ago. I think it's a strong message to the rest of the sector and to the other 67 councils as well, and I hope that there's others that take this lead.
I'll put the amendment now. This is just to cut out the CPI sentence in the submission. All those in favour? All those against? That's carried by majority. There's no division called on the amendment. We'll wait until the motion, if anyone wishes to. Now, anyone who hasn't spoken may speak on the motion as amended. Councillor Crossland.
Thank you, Worship. I'm not sure whether it's relevant to this motion, but can I just get some advice as to when we can actually look at reducing the number of elected members in this council?
I would enjoy telling you, because it was, I think, in 2012 that we conducted our last review of representation, as it is called. It has to be done within every 8 years. So in the first 2 years of the new council, we have to at least ask the question as to wards and number of members, and I'll be quite happily pushing for a reduction to probably 10 members plus a mayor, but I'd be happy with less as well. Anyway, you were saying, Councillor Crossland.
And do we have to wait then another 2 years? Are you saying we have to wait for the 8 years, or could we do that in the beginning of the
Ms.
next
McKenzie.
Council?
Ms.
McKenzie. Through the Chair, because they are run across all of local government, they're scheduled by the State Electoral Office, so we'll get some notification shortly after the next elections, when ours will occur within the next 4 years, and it will be implemented at the 2022 election.
If I could just ask governance to check whether that timing is fixed, because my understanding was it was at least every 8 years.
Yes, my understanding is that we'll get the notification and it will be done within 8 years. The last one was resolved and adopted by council, I think, 6 months prior to the last election in 2014.
In any case, Councillor Crossland, it is a significant exercise. A lot of consultation has to occur. So even if we wanted to, I think we've probably run out of time for this council election, even if we were allowed to. Yeah, usually a 12-month process. Now, any more speakers on the motion? Councillor Westwood.
Yes, I won't be opposing the motion, because generally I'm not a greedy person, but I think it's quite reasonable, it would have been quite reasonable to have the CPI increase in there. I don't think that's particularly greedy by councillors to prefer that, and I would have preferred that because I think it's very fair. But other than that, I certainly don't think there's a warrant that an increase is warranted other than CPI. But I'll just leave that comment there, and I won't be opposing the motion. I think it's not totally unreasonable, but I think leaving the CPI in there would have been quite reasonable. Thank you.
All right. Unless there's any more in favour, move it to close the debate.
Thank you, Your Worship. Yes, I do fully support us staying at the amount that we previously had for our allowances. I do not believe that we need to increase those. There's been questions raised about the Deputy Mayor position, and perhaps I'm one of those people that puts in so many hours, and so one looks at whether it is a fair. But then you have some years, because we do it a change every year, some people don't do as much as others, so I do not believe that that allowance should be increased. I didn't think CPI was too bad to include that, but I understand everyone believes that we should also say no to that, so I support that. Being that that is the general consensus. But I do believe we've got to show restraint. We're asking that of our staff. We're asking that of that we're trying to show residents that we are keeping increases down, that we're trying to be responsible in what we do. So we should not be increasing the allowances.
I'll put the motion. All those in favour? That's carried unanimously. Pay freeze. Right, page 518, members. Into private members' motions, I believe. Councillor Hull to move in relation to the telco tower.
Thank you, Mr. Mayor. I move that the council request administration to write to the health minister requesting that a health assessment be undertaken regarding potential cancer cluster within the area of Barry Road and Milton Street, Oaklands Park, north of Jill Street and south of the Warradale Army Barracks. Mr. Mayor, this motion is as a consequence of representations made to our CAP in regards to a phone tower application in the Warradale Army Barracks. Those representors made it clear that they were concerned because of their neighbours having cancers and dying of cancers. And that's actually documented in the submissions and also for those who attended that hearing. The other thing is, Mr. Mayor, that when that phone tower application came in, I took it upon myself to door knock both Milton Street and Barry Road to actually advise those people of the phone tower application, as I did some 15 years earlier, only to pick up. Now, I'm making this statement in a qualified sense. I still am a registered nurse in this state, and when I started to actually hear of the plight of some of those people in Barry Road, I thought that that was unusual. When I went around into Milton Street and started hearing the same stories, that was more than unusual. And I felt that I have a duty of care, both as a registered nurse and both as a member of this council, to at least put it to this council that it needs to be investigated. And I think the onus is on us, as the local government body, being aware of that formally, in no uncertain terms, that we actually ask the Minister for Health to actually investigate the matter. It may well be that there's another source of radiation or some other source of contaminant that's causing this. I don't know. It's not for me to say. But I can only tell it as it is, and the people can only tell it as it is, and it's over to you, as the local council, as to whether this has the merit to go and be forwarded to the Minister for Health to actually investigate the matter so we can actually put all of our minds at risk, all of our minds at rest, and those, more importantly, the people living in the area.
That seconded, Councillor Byron. Question. All right. Take questions, Councillor Byron.
Thank you, Worship. And Councillor Hull has made reference to the fact that it could be some other cause than the telco tower. What I just want to ask is if the motion and the letter that goes, that we're making sure that it's not linked to the telco tower so as no other investigation is done. I think it needs to be very clear that we're asking for it just to check that area rather than align it with any particular thing so as it is a thorough investigation. And I just wanted to ask that question and whether the motion is that intention or whether the motion is intended to be with the telco tower.
Well, Councillor Byram, the literal reading of the motion is non-specific in that regard, and so it wouldn't be me. It's a request that administration write the letter, so I presume that they would be faithful to the motion passed by council.
Motion, Your Worship, I've got an amendment.
Well, come back to you. Councillor Crossland, question?
It's a little bit on the lines of Councillor Byram. We've had these issues come up before, and I've sat in this room, as have all elected members, and maybe Councillor Hall has forgotten the presentation we had, where we had health experts sitting up there where you are, Your Worship, doing as a full scientific disclosure on any health problems with telco towers. And in fact, they can categorically say that the cancer and radiation coming from those towers is minimal.
So you've got a question here, or are you debating?
Well, the question is that not my recollection that we know that it's not the telco tower, but that title is a little bit misleading.
So you're asking us about whether you have a recollection.
Is that... No, I'm asking you if that
Can
is correct information. Is that correct information?
Well, the fact is that in relation to telco towers, I mean, I've been in the ERD court before about these things, and the prevailing scientific evidence, which has been preferred to date in every contested case in the ERD court, is that the health risk is minimal. Now, I know a lot of people don't believe that, but that is the prevailing weight of medical advice. And to answer your question,
that's
probably what you recollected.
Thank you.
Now, is the motion seconded? Councillor Byram, anything to add?
Just that I believe we need to look at that area, but I wanted to make sure that the staff do not write linking it to the telco tower, that it is a general request for consideration of what's happening in that area. Thank you.
Yes, it's a community health concern. Right, speaking against or amendments?
I'd like to amend. I think, first of all, we can't be naive. The topic is called Health Assessment Telco Tower. So that is what this motion is about.
Point of order, Mr. Mayor.
What's the point of order?
You quite rightly pointed out before, the motion is the motion. The header put on there by staff has got nothing to do with me.
Ms. McKenzie thinks that that's what was contained in the email with the motion as a header, but in any case, I think from the debate that I'll uphold the point of order, because the motion is the motion, and administration we would expect to reflect the motion that's passed, not the internal reference to it. So I uphold the point of order, but it's really just a clarification of sorts. Yeah, Councillor Bleski, you keep going.
Basically, that a report be requested about about the prevalence of preventable cancer throughout each suburb of Marion from the State Health Minister. Further, that information on these how these instances can be reduced be provided, and the role of government in their reduction.
I think that's massively beyond the scope of the motion.
Okay,
so
I'll just put it for that area.
The amendment.
I'm just happy to have that in the area. For the area talked about, I guess I'd like research to be done about preventable cancers in that area. If I can explain why, Your Worship.
Prevent? Well, I mean,
yes.
I'm not sure what that means as a medical term.
Well, Your Worship, it's quite obvious what this motion is about. We've got the same member that's taking the council to court over the telco tower, knocking on doors. There will be higher rates
of
cancer in that area.
There's a point of order, Councillor
Hull. Now, is the councillor speaking against or for the motion?
He's speaking against.
Speaking against.
But he has the same community concerns. That's
what
he's
expressing. I'm sure he does. Yeah,
so there is no point of order.
I'm sure he'll get to it.
Well, the way we're going, you may not get this passed tonight if you keep interjecting, Councillor Hull, with points of order. Councillor Valescu, it's over to you.
Yeah, look, I know that area. There's a lot of disadvantage in that area. We have the most vulnerable people, people with many challenges in their lives, past and current, and sadly into the future. There are so many things going on, and unfortunately, as is the case, people with the challenges of poverty, health, other things that are going on are sadly more likely to suffer from certain types of illnesses. So I would not be surprised if there is a prevalence, higher cancers in those areas. And I think that's something that does need to be brought to government's attention. What I don't appreciate is when a concern about an issue is being, in my view, manipulated for media attention. We just had a motion here about Wi-Fi going throughout the city of Marion, and it's exactly the same radiation that comes from phone towers. So the issues, these things emit much more radiation than a phone tower does. There's three on my desk, there's three on other people's desks as well. This is just about scaremongering. Now, if I appreciate the fact that an elected member will listen to the community and take their concerns and represent them, but you need to do that effectively. If you're not happy with certain types of infrastructure going out, you speak to the federal government, you speak to the state government, you lobby for more power for these things to be stopped, because the telco towers, when they go to the ERD court, will not be stopped. That's what happens in the past. We are wasting time. We're getting people's hopes up for that. We need to be on the federal members of parliament's front door and the state members of parliament to allow the rules to change. If the community doesn't want telco towers in, that's where you change things.
Councillor, you've had plenty of time, but did you want to persist with an amendment?
Basically, that council, an assessment of preventable cancers within that area.
So
because that looks at all of the.
You want to write to the health minister requesting that a health assessment be undertaken regarding a potential cancer cluster or not? You don't agree with that?
Preventable cancers within that area, because cancer cluster is
preventable actually changes it quite a bit.
That isn't the cancer clusters in that area is basically cleverly designed to create panic about something giving people cancer, and I know exactly what that something is that people are trying to say.
I mean,
is the problem.
If there's an objection there, it's rather that it's more or less stated as a fact when it's not a known fact. So possibly it should be assessment be undertaken to assess whether there is a cancer cluster within the area, and if so, the causes.
Yep. I'm happy with that amendment.
Yeah, but I mean that's actually stating that there is a potential cancer cluster, and we actually don't know that there is. What, in the sense that there's one in this room, there's one everywhere in the world. Well, look, order. The councillor is able to frame his amendment, and then we'll have a look at it.
I think what you suggested, Your Worship, was fine. I would like to continue afterwards.
So regarding... Now, as I say, the word preventable, I think, is contentious because it changes the focus completely.
Your suggested wording was fine.
Regarding whether
possibly
there is a cancer cluster within, etc. Order. Let's get this right. Regarding whether there is a cancer cluster. And then at the end of it, a comma, and if so, the causes.
Is there a procedure motion to extend time? Something that's allowed? Halfway through my discussion.
The call is with you. Are you happy with the amendment? Right. Did you want to move something else? Did you?
I'm quite extension of time. But
to complete this motion.
If it's Councillor Westwood.
Sorry, are the mover and seconder happy to accept that? All right. By leave of the meeting, the mover and seconder are happy to accept that wording. So is there anyone now speaking against it? There are a few. Well, I'll leave it to you to speak against it in a moment. But, Councillor Vlescu, the call was with you. I'll leave it with you if you want to move a procedural motion.
To extend time for this, there are other motions, but I'm happy to leave it just for the motions that were carried over from the last meeting. So they don't go over for two meetings.
They? because they all get the new date, don't they?
So it might have been the bite one.
Was the bite in for the on the last one or not? That would be community bus, Central Avenue. We dealt with the LED lighting, did we? No. It's not there now.
Oh, it's been referred to the next one.
Naming we did, oil and gas. Is that new or not? No.
No, that's
so. That's down to including oil and gas. So you're moving extension of time to deal with those matters. And look, you might just want to include and the questions on notice as well, because that doesn't take any time. Is that seconded? Councillor Westwood would like to be here a bit longer. Thank you. Anyone? Well, I'll put the motion. All those in favour? All those against? That's carried. I'll ask the Deputy Mayor to take the chair, please. I've had someone in hospital I have to attend to. Excuse me.
Do I still talk, or...? Look, I don't take people's health issues lightly, and I think we need to look at them, but we need to look at it objectively. And I do welcome the fact that Councillor Hull has gone door knocking in the area, and I can encourage him to keep doing it, because there's lots of social issues in that area, there's lots of dumped rubbish constantly in that area, there's lots of housing SA issues in that area, people don't feel safe, there's all sorts of things going on, and it's really welcome that the council's there, and he can, and his fellow council are more than welcome to stick around and support members of that community, tackle all the issues that they face.
Right, is anyone speaking against the motion? Councillor Crossland.
Thank you. I'm speaking against the motion, by the way, it's been brought to Council. As Councillor Valesky has just mentioned, if this said health assessment, housing SA residents, cancer cluster, we'd be up in arms. That is purposefully put in there to alarm people. It's Telco Tower, 287A Morphett Road, completely separate issue. We already know that it's extremely... definitely not the telco tower that's causing that cancer cluster, if in fact there is one particular thing that's causing it. So whatever that title's on there, I can't support that motion.
Anyone speaking for the motion? And Councillor Hull, can you close, please?
Thank you, Madam Deputy Mayor. That's not on the motion. So, you know, if you don't want to vote for that, you don't have to, because it's not part of the motion. And as for the suggestion that I'm being alarmist, now let's take a step back. On the night that it was heard, Councillor Byram heard the residents make reference to it. I didn't make it up. I didn't make it public. They did. Ask the Messenger journalist that was there on the night whether I made it up, whether I actually used it as some sort of opportunity to scare the bejesus out of the community. It was them. All I'm doing is representing my people. And if those here amongst us want to criticise me for that, well, they remain condemned. And as for the suggestion I don't take an interest in all the other issues in that area, well, if staff might tell you how many customer requests I put in about that area. I'm in there quite regularly. I'm there committed with the Roger Rashid project, heavily committed in that area. And I always look at it as my obligation to those people, because they are doing it tough. And I really resent the fact that there's some insinuation that I'm actually just causing a little bit of sensationalism here. It is what it is. And as for what title's on it, well, look, it's up to the minister and his department to actually do the investigation, work out what, if there is an issue here, and what the cause might be, as per the resolution. And I welcome Councillor Valescu's contribution to that. He's actually made it a better motion. Thank you for that. I spent a lot of time in that area, and in fact it was probably 15 years ago that it was actually another Valescu, Vicky, who was actually led the charge in that effort to try and stop the phone tower because of those very concerns. The phone tower is one of the suspects. That's all it is. It could be that there's something in the military facility that's causing it. And as for the demographics, let's not just think that we're focusing on housing trusts, because the demographics in the two streets are very different. We're talking about a street that is actually primarily owned by those residents, and the other street is housing trust. So there's a mix of demographics there. And that makes it even more peculiar, because if it was just the fact that, well, these people are doing it tough and they've got a higher risk of having cancers and illnesses, well, fair enough, but this is actually a mix of demographics, and it actually makes me even more concerned. So if you're in any doubt, go and ask any of those panel members on the CAP as to how it all unfolded, or whether it's just Bruce Hull trying to catch a headline.
Okay, I'll put the motion. All those in favour? All those against? The motion is carried. Division? Ask all those in favour to stand. All right, so we've got Councillors Pfeiffer, Councillor Kerry, Councillor Pryor, Councillor Hull, Councillor Westwood, Valescu and Gard. Those against? Councillor Telfer, Councillor Appleby and Councillor Crossland. Sorry, moving on to the next one then. We're on page 519, the community bus. Councillor Crossland, are you moving that? Moving. A seconder? Thank you, Councillor Westwood. Councillor Crossland, over to you.
Yeah, just very briefly, look, this is a request for a report, just to look at the opportunity of the benefits of looking at an additional community bus. I don't really need to speak much to it, but the other option as well is to look at the possibility of introducing a electric bus to our fleet. I think that's quite an important point to this motion. And as I say, really at this stage, it's just looking at a report to see the feasibility of such an additional vehicle to our fleet.
Councillor Westwood.
Very briefly, I thank Councillor Crossland for moving this very good initiative. And of course, it's in particular centering into the Trott Park Neighbourhood Centre, and I think that's a very worthwhile centre for that whole area. So thanks, and all the best.
Anyone speaking against the motion? Then I put the motion. All those in favour? Those against? The motion is carried. Moving on to Central Avenue Playground Upgrade on page 521. Councillor Crossland, you're moving the motion. Someone to second? Councillor Gard? Councillor Crossland, over to you.
Thank you, Deputy Mayor. So basically, in a nutshell, this the Central Avenue Reserve is on our plan to replace that playground in that reserve in the budget we've just passed, and staff will be going out to consultation on a new design. I've had a number of residents approach me regarding that reserve and another reserve called Friar Street, which is literally 50 metres away. They're two very different reserves, both in topography and sea views and trees. Is what I'd like to do is, rather than do several consultations on different things to do with that one area, I'm requesting that as part of the consultation we just go out once to those group of residents, because one group of residents covers both reserves, and then we can actually look at where residents themselves would prefer the new playground to go. In addition, there's a very seldom used road which now cuts through Central Avenue Road Reserve, and again residents are looking at the feasibility of why is that road there. It's a danger to children who use the two sides of the reserve, And again, I would like to find out if that's just a small number of residents or whether or not it's a group as a whole that would be interested in removing that, because as we know, we don't want to just go with the small number squeaky wheel, and let's look at the overall perception of all the residents.
Councillor Gard.
Thank you, Madam Deputy Mayor. Just to say that this is one of the oldest parts of Hallett Cove, and probably demographically at the poorer end of the scale as well. Not a greatly serviced area compared with others, very deserving therefore. So I do commend the motion.
Anyone speaking against the motion? Then I put the motion. All those in favour? Those against? Now that, can I just have the hands again? Those in favour? So that's carried unanimously. Page 526, the oil and gas exploration in the Great Australian Bight. Councillor Velescu, you're moving. Anyone to second the motion? Councillor Hull, over to you, Councillor Velescu.
Thank you, Your Worship. This letter, this issue was brought to me by a resident who's quite concerned and involved in the group. I wasn't aware of the issue, and generally if it's an issue that's sort of outside our council area, normally we do focus on what's in our areas. However, this has a huge impact, huge potential impact and risk on a lot of South Australia, including our own council. We've got representatives, I believe the mayor from Kangaroo Island, actually going to speak to the company, the Norwegian company, 67% government-owned, who are looking at this proposal, who have got the rights to do the drilling in the Bight. The diagrams show that if something happens in winter, we've got a 90% chance of quite significant oil spillage on our very shores and our neighbours' shores. There's already been motions passed by Onkaparinga Council and Holfast Bay Council and other councils in the area. And it's also something that was going to come to us eventually through the Metropolitan Seasides Coastal Committee, Coastal Council Committee, I'm not sure of the exact name, because they're concerned about it. The report has been put together by the same person that put the report about the Texas-sized plastic waste sort of tranche in the Pacific Ocean. So this has got some serious scientific backing, and it has also been peer-reviewed on behalf of, issued by the Wilderness Society. This is significant risk, and the issue is when we've got, when there is something of significant risk with oil and gas, quite often we have the fears about, you know, we're running out of oil, running out of gas. It seems like the easy gas, the easy oil, is easy for us to get out, and it's sold for a pittance overseas. You can buy it for, you know, just over half the price in Japan for natural gas than you got here. But when it's a risk for us, then we go into those riskier developments like this one. One accident, and you've got Caltex and I believe Chevron that have backed out. They don't want a part of it. And you've got a Norwegian company. Now, let's look at Norway. They've had a royalties tax on their oil for many years. They don't need the money. In fact, they've got a sovereign fund that has $1 million for each of their residents. They can't spend it for fear of hyperinflation. So they don't need the money. This is a huge environmental risk, and along with the environmental risk is an economic risk. You've got 25% of the seafood in the area. You've got $1.4 billion worth of economic benefit in the area, and finally you've got $350 million of wages that we're risking as well.
Councillor Hull.
Happy to second this, Madam Deputy Mayor. I've been keeping an eye on this for a while, and Councillor Lesk is right. The Mayor of Kangaroo Island did go to Denmark and try and take the the complaint to them and the objection to them, to his credit. And he paid for that himself, I believe, that trip, which is even more admirable. Look, I can't believe the previous state government even went along with this, and also fracking. You know, that's another hideous way of actually getting the gas that can be sold for a pittance as well. So I can only hope that our efforts tonight could actually influence an appropriate outcome. Hopefully the new government, Liberal governments don't have a good track record with this sort of stuff, but we'll see. And maybe the Minister, David Spears, will actually, once again, I'll make the comment, might show his mettle on this, because he's for sure that we'll get decimated with the predictions that are in this report if there was a spill. You know, those valuable seabeds and that are just off our coast would be damaged severely. So I just think that we're actually just one entity that might be just actually indicating our objection to this, and it may well make a difference. And from little things, big things grow, and we'll see what happens.
Thank you. Anyone speaking against the motion? Councillor Appleby.
Thank you. I'm confident that any drilling undertaken by any companies would have to meet stringent environmental standards. I'm a bit concerned there's a lack of balance in the information we've been provided. We're only seeing one side of the picture. It would have been good to understand the other side. And I also think that we shouldn't kid ourselves. We're not experts in this area. So I think even if we condemn it, it doesn't really have a ring of credibility.
Anyone else speaking for the motion? Councillor Velescu? Oh, sorry, you're closing, of course. Councillor Gard, you wish.
This is a very emotive topic indeed, and very important to our state as at large, and not just the shorelines, but the fishing industry and other industries and wildlife, both marine and otherwise. It is not something that doesn't happen, these disasters. I clearly remember the Exxon disaster, the ship, but also the little deposit that BP made in the Bay of Mexico that cost them quite a few billion. It's certainly a risk that can be calculated, but there are times when you've got to say, is the downside too unbearable to even bother about calculating the risk? And I think this might be one of those cases. South Australia is one of the last places in the world where the water is actually clean compared with most other parts of the world. It's the cleanest, the Southern Ocean is the cleanest in the world. So it's a very special place and needs to be given very special consideration.
Anyone else speaking against the motion? Then I ask Councillor Velescu to close.
Thank you, Your Worship. As I said before, this report has not been done by someone low rank. This has been done by someone who's an absolute expert in marine biology and marine ecology, someone whose work and photos on the plastic waste has turned many heads and gotten action. That's how respected their viewpoints are. So for us to hide behind, well, there's environmental regulations, there's development regulations which we don't really agree with, there's all sorts of regulations, doesn't mean that they're strong enough, doesn't mean they're appropriate enough. And in this case, there's a very high risk just to make essentially a foreign company wealthy and a few crumbs our way as a country, as a state. This is a very high risk project, and it's not a risk that we should have to take. You know, if we were embracing other technologies at a faster rate, we probably wouldn't even be having this discussion. But anyway, I don't have kids myself, but my legacy in local government, whatever step I can take, is to create a leave the place in a better state than when I found it, and hopefully this is a step towards that direction.
Thank you. I'll put the motion. All those in favour? Those against? The motion is carried. Now that it has carried, I just would like to say that it was something that was discussed extensively amongst South Australian councils at the National Assembly, and most councils are bringing some form of motion or other. Moving on to page 531, higher charges for council operated. No, we're not doing that one. Sorry. Questions with notice. I'll take them as read. And therefore I close the meeting at 21:52. Thank you.